All right, and good evening. This is Erin Backus. Welcome back to the Aha Moment Podcast. We are, Irene, we are at episode 23. This is
That's amazing.
This is the second person of our third season. Third season, Irene. I can't believe it. We've had listeners from all over the world, Australia, Spain, France, Canada, you know, Mexico, Peru, you know, there's, and of course, US, Canada. But
anyone from UK? Anyone from UK yet?
I will have to do some little research and figure out how to do that.
I'm going to send a link to the Thrive Network, the Thrive organization, and get them to be attuned to it. So.
If you don't know about the Aha Moment, we interview horticultural therapists, but also related professionals in the field. And we are very honored to have Richard Slayton here tonight.
Good evening.
Richard, where do you hail from?
Well, originally, my hometown is Appleton, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I've graduated from the UW in Madison. Worked here a few years, moved out east, worked in Hartford for a year, then New York City for 10 years, came back to Madison in 91, and I've been here since.
Okay. All
right. Yeah, Richard. Go ahead, Irene.
I was going to say, I just wanted to have our listeners understand where we all are, where our interviewees are from. So
Richard is, you're a landscape architect, correct?
Correct.
So Richard's career spans over four decades of service to the profession of landscape architecture and the creation of environments for healthcare and senior living. He has served on the Uniform National Exam Review Board as American Society of Landscape Architect Executive Committee member, including the New York City Chapter President and Wisconsin Chapter Treasurer. He also serves currently on the American Horticultural Therapy Association board. And as evidenced by a decade of service to the City of Madison Urban Design Commission, Richard is passionate about improving the quality of life in social environments. Following graduate studies, he's incorporated the concept of biophilia to explore enhancements in the quality of our interaction with nature. So he's actually posted, Richard is really good at writing articles and has done a lot of articles for company. How do you pronounce that?
Erdman.
Yeah. Yep. So we are, I'm excited to have Richard on. I get to work with him on the HTA basis. So it's really going to be awesome to learn a little bit more about his Aha Moment.
And we haven't had anyone who's actually a landscape architect. And so in coming from that perspective, so it'll be great to have that, avenue and that channel for our listeners to understand how you apply therapeutic horticulture or therapeutic gardening into your practice. But to start off with, all right, so you work for a firm right now, or are you a sole proprietor?
I work for Erdman. Company that designs and builds medical campuses and senior living communities. And I actually started with Erdman right out of college. And they were the company that transferred me to the Hartford. They had a Hartford, Connecticut office at the time, as well as the home office in Madison. when you're young, I was there for a year. And it was, worked with great people, great experience. But you get itchy after 12 months. And that's when I moved to New York City. I'm a big fan of jazz. Started playing music when I was in fifth grade. And so I've always been interested in going to New York City. And, you know, it's interesting the reaction you get from people. What are you going to do in New York City? It's all concrete. And it's, you know, so you need to educate people along the way. I've always enjoyed new experiences. And it's amazing when you mention that I've been doing this for 40 years.
I know.
More than 40 years. It's, you know, I still, you're still waiting for that perfect project.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Had a lot of great experiences doing healing gardens, doing plazas in New York City, waterfront mm-hmm. developments. And it just goes by so fast.
So what was it that led you to the concept of the therapeutic garden design and the value of it? Was there a project that you were working with one of the firms that you had, you know, taken the step ladder, you know, through your career and understand, oh, there's something to this. What were some of the shining moments that really led you to the therapeutic garden design?
Well, the biggest thing that happened, and it's always in the, pardon the pun, there's always a seed in your mind that is about to germinate. And it wasn't until working with Erdman, now I haven't been with Erdman my entire career.
Right.
They've come back, I'm on my third tour right now.
And, okay. You've had some moments of separation and then you've returned.
And it's always, you always go out and gather new things and then bring them back.
And the fact that they value you to do that is really promising as well.
Well, I kept the key, so, you know, they do. But one thing that Erdman was really promoting probably 12, maybe 15 years ago was evidence-based design. And they mm-hmm. wanted a certain percentage of the company to have EDAC certification. Mm-hmm. So through that, you learn about the research that's been done. And of course, being an architect, a designer, everything we do is evidence-based design. Mm-hmm. So at first you look at it somewhat skeptical and think, well, what will they teach me that I'm kind of not headed down the path already?
Right.
But what it is, like with forest bathing, mm-hmm. A great story with forest bathing. I was telling a couple friends that I was giving a talking at a conference on senior living communities, and one of the topics was going to be forest bathing. Mm-hmm. And they said, you make them take baths?
Exactly.
But no, not forced. Forest. that one never gets old. So, anyway.
You really have to articulate it, enunciate it. Forest.
That's hilarious.
So,
oh my God.
But like with forest bathing, I recall in my youth, during my high school years, during college, in New York, walking through forests, whether they were urban forests or whether out in the country. And I said, well, it's pretty obvious that walking in the forest is going to make you feel better. But mm-hmm. the thing about it is that the Japanese have studied it and actually quantified how it helps you. The same with Ulrich. Yeah, anyone knows that I'd rather look at a tree than look at a brick wall when I'm recovering from surgery. Mm-hmm. But they did, they took the time, analyzed it, studied it, and came out with definitive results. That's what evidence-based design has done for me. It's given me a resource that I can refer to.
You have a reference of quality that people are going to be like, oh, there's actually publications on this information. That's great to know. Yeah, mm-hmm. you have to have that in your back pocket.
Being nominated to the board of directors for the American Horticultural Therapy Association was this great honor for me, because you got, it gave me a chance to meet with people that do this every day, where the type of work that I do on a daily basis is more site analysis, master planning, things like that. There are healing gardens where you get into a more specific realm of therapy, but it's not like horticultural therapists. So it's, mm-hmm. I really value what I've been able to learn.
So do you have designs that are active programming spaces for contracting horticultural therapists to come in and use the spaces effectively?
Currently, I am in a, let's call it a marketing mode, mm-hmm. where when we work with a provider on a senior living community, we will talk with them about the benefits of having someone on staff.
Right.
That these people are going to need programs, and definitely being in nature will help them. But if they're in a setting where there's someone that can guide them, they'll get that more, much more out of it. Mm-hmm. A person in a child in grade school can learn a lot about geography looking at a map, but it really works better when you have someone who can guide you through the map and explain mm-hmm. things about how things came to be.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I like that point of view.
Yeah. I mean, somebody recently said, you know, we're basically as practitioners, as horticultural therapists, and even occupational therapists or whatever therapists we are, and we're employing the uses of plant-based activities, we're facilitating it, we're bringing it to the forefront, but really it's the module of that material that's really making it impactful. It's just, we're kind of bringing it to life at the same time. So,
I mean, there's so many ways to look at this with, being interested in music. I went through mm-hmm. a period thinking about music therapy.
Your love for jazz, for instance.
Right.
Yeah.
My nephew is a physical therapist, and I asked him once how he came to study that. Was he just flipping through a college catalog? He said, no, when he was in high school, he actually had a sports injury that he worked with a physical therapist and realized this is what I want to do.
No kidding.
So I've had, getting back to the aha moment.
Yeah.
Throughout my career, there are challenges throughout anyone's career. You have highs and lows, and you keep thinking, well, I'm going to give it another 5 years before I decide, another 5 years. And then before you know it, you're 35 years into it.
No kidding.
So you look at what your knowledge set is, mm-hmm. and how you want to go forward with that. So horticultural therapy, and again, I'm not an HT, mm-hmm. but I have a respect for it and realize the importance of getting people involved. Mm-hmm.
So that's actually a really good point. You are not an HT. You do have, however, the background of the landscape architecture, and you have the studies and the evidence-based information for your references. But do you ever work collaborating with horticultural therapists or people who are the activities coordinator to talk about the facility and the use of and understanding what are some really great design features to implement into your designs?
That is something that I would say as of the last 2 years, I've been getting more involved with, where I have better access. I've always had access to the providers or the presidents of hospitals. But my message is so much more clear to me and so much stronger that I have for them. And one thing that when we do a healing garden, I've always said the most important thing to having a successful healing garden is real estate and the desire of the owner mm-hmm. to have a healing garden. From mm-hmm. there, mm-hmm. there's a number of ways you can design a healing garden, mm-hmm. but real estate and dedication by the owner. Mm-hmm. So typically with our medical campuses, with the senior living communities, it's getting in touch with the providers and making sure we work through things together so that frequently you don't have a lot of real estate, but there are things you can do to make the most of the real estate you have.
Yeah. If anything, the more the tighter or the more confined environments are the most rewarding and challenging to bring to life.
Exactly.
So it's interesting that you're saying this too, because it's kind of translating to me as a situation where, I don't know if Aaron, you've had this complication but when I work with assisted living facilities or senior living facilities, and I have to coordinate with the activities coordinator or the life enrichment coordinator, I kind of have to really sell them on horticultural therapy for them to adopt it, you know, to embrace it and to then tell their residents, this is amazing, we're going to take you over to this place, you're going to love it, da, 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 da. But if they're not excited by it, and if even if the president of the hospital or the president of the senior living facility says that you're going to spend a bajillion, you know, this amount of money on a great, you know, setting for this, if the coordinator of or the activities coordinator of that facility is not excited by it, it goes awry. It just goes awry. So you really, it's so important to have that middle ground covered.
I mean, definitely. I think that's even like in, even when like I was started at the hospital, like I, you know, the staff slowly became aware, like, wow, this is such a good group and like patients really enjoy it, because if they're not excited or not pushing the patients to do it, they won't do it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And if you have something that they can, again, with the senior living communities, they can sell to potential residents. It's like, we have this program that we offer. And that to educate the person that would be coming in or their families of the person that would be moving in, so that they appreciate what's involved with a horticultural therapy program.
Right.
It's not just, what was the thing that I read recently? Gardening is such great therapy. Plus you get tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes.
But to know, I mean, to throughout my childhood, my father wanted to be a farmer. The backyard was his garden. And we grew pole beans, strawberries, kohlrabi, you know, just loved being in the garden. Saturday mornings were spent going out to local farmers to get manure to spread in the garden. Woohoo. So my aha moment has been something that has been in slow motion since I was a kid.
Right. Well, I mean, you're in the field of landscape architecture too. I mean, that's been something inherent in you, is connecting to the land in some ways.
And one thing that I've always thought when I was challenged as to whether or not I wanted to continue with landscape architecture, that whether or not it became my career, I always valued what I learned having been in it. And the same with horticultural therapy.
So speaking of which, now that you're kind of digging deeper into the practice, learning from, you know, peers,
you
like
you guys and your plant puns tonight.
I know.
We're just trying to get to the root of the situation.
I knew I would hear something from you, Richard.
Oh God. We're gonna have another one soon, I can tell. But anyway, so where was I going now? Oh, so learning, say, from peers like Aaron, when you are connecting with more horticultural therapists or maybe other landscape designers who do therapeutic garden design, what are some things that you feel like just recently, maybe in the last 2 years, that you're like, well, you know, I never really thought of that. I'm going to start incorporating that into my planning. Is there anything vivid that you can think of like that? Which I know is big.
Okay, so you're putting me on the spot. And, you know, I'm in, it's a listening phase for me right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, anyone who's,
that wasn't on the list of questions.
When I lived in New York, Harvard instituted a graduate program for landscape architecture. Mm-hmm. And I remember a friend of mine that was with the Parks Department was going to go there and get that degree. And when they were telling me about it, I said, what, do they teach you to cut people off in mid-sentence? Because it's always this aggressive, I know better, I know better, I know better. Mm. Well, it's, I love being in a situation where I do not know better. Mm. I have things that I can learn if only I listen. Mm. So I'm really enjoying the things that I'm just by association, you know, and it's like, so you get a bucket of dirt and you have people put their hands in it. You plant a seed and you come back in a week and look, but what is a real program like? And how does this, you know, how does this relate to their personal development? You know, getting back to my father in January, he built a sandbox on stilts with a heating coil under it and this green sides with a fluorescent lamp over the top.
Yeah.
That in January he started his seeds.
Yep.
When they got, 2 inches, 3 inches tall, he had a hoop greenhouse that he built himself in the backyard that he would transfer things to there and then finally to the garden.
Yeah.
And I remember going through things after he passed away and finding calendars where he had made notes, 45 days for this to be ready, you know, so that he was timing things in his garden. And that was not his profession. He was a journeyman electrician, but he just loved working in the garden. You know, and as kids, you have to go out and pick the pole beans with mosquitoes all over the place, and you have to do this and that. So it's like, I'll just go to the farmer's market. So I come from a completely different perspective, but I certainly appreciate what it does for people.
That's awesome. And the fact that he, I think one neat thing about growing and trying to grow is the problem solving. And your father sounds like he was really interested in that. You know, the technology is the problem solving aspect of it too. Right. It's like using that part of your brain. And so how can I make this more of an easy, accessible situation? Let's just elevate it. And then exactly. We don't have to use all this plastic crud. Anyways, I'm just going to put it into a big planter. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. That's and it awesome. Was so, it was such a warm fuzzy coming home.
Totally.
High school in the winter, of course, in Wisconsin, 6 months out of the year, you're in darkness. You know, it seems like it. So yeah. Coming home at night after
relate. High school. I'm in Maine. I relate. Yeah.
Coming home at night after high school, you see that glow in the basement from the fluorescent lamp, and you realize you're going to be eating this later this summer.
Well, on that note, we have a question relating to plants and design, but I'm going to let Aaron ask it because I monopolize the questions too much, so I'm going to be quiet now.
That's our thing, Irene. Like, it's just, you know, I'm the back end of the stuff, you know. Anyways, so Richard, I mean, you're doing these, I mean, I guess I don't really know how to, I guess, efficiently and effectively ask you this question. Usually I ask HTs what's their favorite plant to use in sessions. So what would be like when you're doing like healing garden designs, you what would be like a go-to plant that you always put in there? into your designs or things like that?
Yeah. First, I tend to use, I try to use 85% native plant material. Mm. And then 15% for just special things that that we might want to use. I did a very formal labyrinth on one of my projects. Ooh. Where we had 7 sunflower trees planted mm-hmm. around it.
Heptacodium.
Yes. It's
what's a
great
sunflower plant. Tree?
It's called 7 sunflower, Heptacodium miscinoides. It has these amazing jasmine fragrant flowers that bloom in Connecticut. It's probably around late August, September. In Maine, it's September, October.
And the sun is like daughter sun, not moon and sun.
Right.
And it's got this great distinctive bark. That's a unique color. It appeals. And the blossoms are white and their seams are red. So it gets this color change that's happening. And we use multi-stem plants. Yep. So it has kind of a casual feel, but in a very formal arrangement. Mm-hmm. That was fun to use.
So they're framing the labyrinth? Is that what you're saying?
It's like, think of the labyrinth like a big circle on the ground.
Yeah.
And these are like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. So all around the
labyrinth. Oh, this is a big one. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Very cool.
40 foot diameter. Like
wow. What are the paths made out of?
It's, they're pavers, concrete pavers. And it was actually the landscape installer was able to find a manufacturer that had a kit that they just had to follow the directions. And I took a group of my students there. And of course, walking the labyrinth, it's a very deliberate spiritual activity.
Right.
Where you fold your hands and you walk deliberately and turn, and just it's very slow motion. Of course, when my students got there, it was a race to see who could go. And then, of course, what a great learning opportunity that was for them. Yeah. Another thing that we have at one of the healing gardens is we call it a grotto. It's an area that has cut stone seats, just maybe 4 feet long, 2 feet wide, 2 feet tall, and they're put in tangents to form a circle. Mm-hmm. And then in the middle of it is an American beech tree, mm-hmm. which ultimately will cover the space like an umbrella. Mm-hmm. And that was intended to be a space where families can go and just be with themselves and their thoughts if they're mm-hmm. facing some difficult times. Mm-hmm. We set it up so that it would be adjacent to a water feature that would provide some background noise. Mm-hmm. So it's more, I mean, there's specific plants that I use, but it's more about the settings that they're in. Mm-hmm.
But even still, like the selection that you decide on has an intention, like the Heptacodium has a year-round interest. It has mm-hmm. a very fragrant flower when it's blooming.
That blooms later too, right?
Yeah, and I love the pendulous leaf formation where it's almost like a weeping dogwood in some of its leaf form to it. It's got a nice, they're fast growing. That's for one.
They really are.
and, unlike the American beech, which is very slow growing.
And we did plant some, to create some interest in quasi rooms. We planted some arborvitas, the mm-hmm. columnar arborvitas. And of course, deer will find their way to the garden. And you can always tell when the deer have been there because as far as they can reach, that's how much they've been eaten.
They create these little narrow mushroom caps.
Right. And was there with the previous hospital president. And she came out to do some reworking of the garden with us after the pandemic, because the hospital put all its energy towards keeping patients safe, and the garden was kind of shut down for a while. But we got there last spring and started doing some work on it. And she pointed out that seeing that arborvita like that only makes her feel better, because we're providing for that much more of the natural world and giving food to the deer.
That's
the way to look at it. Yeah.
That's a great way to look at it. Oh, dear. No pun in. Oh, gosh. Oh, geez.
Another pun. Man. Oh, dear.
Oh, you make me fawn. All right, stop. Stop. Gee, we talked for 2 hours. There's only 10 minutes of usable material.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
And, you know, an interesting thing about when I came back from New York, and again, that was 91, I made it a bit of a goal to learn 10, 15 different plants every summer. I was weak on the perennial stuff. And once you start using them, you really start to find your art. Mm-hmm. And I guess, like most people, you start with the more typical things that are readily available, and then you realize that you wouldn't use that plant again, but it got you where you were headed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it's never a perfect. The first time around, sometimes you have to make modifications. You learn from it too. So, well, Richard, this has been really great. I love hearing your perspective. We could chat and chat about your landscape design for a lot longer. And that's how we feel with all of our interviewees. Isn't that right, Aaron? We always want to just talk longer. But we know people's attention spans in reality.
You are the talker of this relationship. And I am the back end of this relationship.
I do have a subtle tribute, and that is this year I do plan to have an area of my yard dedicated to sunflowers.
Oh, nice.
Yes. A lot of people, a lot of us are doing that. Yep. Yeah.
Yes, sunflower, definitely.
We're very fortunate to be where we are in our lives right now, that's for sure. And we're very fortunate to serve people, connecting them to plants and through extreme times. And sunflowers will definitely represent the year of 2022 for a particular country that is going through so much devastation right now. So I really did not know they grew so many sunflowers. I had no idea. I really didn't. It's pretty remarkable to learn about that.
Well, and it's something that you don't have a reason to think about it typically.
Right, exactly. All right. Well, thank you so much, Richard.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
I hope we can see some of your examples of your healing gardens and maybe a presentation at AHTA sometime soon.
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
I would love to see the labyrinth. I think that sounds gorgeous.
You know, one thing that I've been working towards is, why should the healing garden be a place that people have to go to? Why can't the journey from the car to the main entry be a healing experience?
Interesting.
The same kind of ties into thoughts about, why do we have to take the rain that falls and quickly take it to a hole in the ground? Why not use it where it falls and celebrate its passing through the site rather than
putting it in exactly.
It's rain chains.
Yeah, I mean, it's just called the cycle of hydrology in nature. We need to embrace that and stop compacting our soils. Let's get some let's get some pervious pavements out there and
say that 10 times.
I know. Pervious pavement.
All right. Aaron, you'll edit that, right?
Yeah. I am keeping this all on because this is just a wonderful conversation, and it makes me laugh and smile. But thank you guys for we will see you all on the next Aha Moment, and thank you very much, Richard, for coming on tonight.
Again, my pleasure. Bye, everybody. Great to see you.
Good night, everyone.